Thank you very, very much. Tonight we're going to look at the arrest of Jesus and the betrayal of Judas. This is one of the few stories that all four of the gospel writers have. However, it's kind of interesting, and if we wanted to take the time, which I don't, but I would suggest you might want to read all four of them and see how each one of them kind of comes from a different angle. Some leave some things out. But all four of them did include it. Tonight we're going to look at the first part of John's, and then we're going to use Matthew as our main story. So, Leroy, if you'll look up Matthew 26, I think it starts at verse 47 on the arrest of Jesus. And Roger, if you'll look up John 18... verse 1. Okay? And we'll start with John's version. Remember, John's is written almost 40 years after. And he throws in a little bit of detail that Matthew, Mark, and Luke absolutely do not throw in. So if you'll start, Roger, with John 18, let's go to verse 5.
Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth with his disciples over the ravine of Kidron, where there was a garden into which he himself entered and his disciples. Now Judas also, who was betraying...
Okay, let's stop there for a second then. Okay. John's the only one that mentions this brook. And remember, Jesus was in Gethsemane, a large garden. And after finally the disciples were asleep three times, he finally tells them when he goes back the third time, arise, it's time to get things moving. So he goes and he crosses this brook. What was the name of it?
Kidron.
Kidron, okay? And he goes to another part of the garden. John put this in here because to me it was kind of a fascinating thing. What time of year was this? And what festival was going on? Passover. And what did they do? What did they offer? What did they sacrifice?
Lambs.
Lots of lambs.
Thousands of them.
And this brook ran from the temple, or from the temple down through the Garden of Gethsemane. And it was this brook was the runoff for all of the blood that was shed from the sacrificing of the lambs. So during Passover week, this river, this brook, was mostly red with blood. Now John throws this in because you certainly can see the irony, or however you want to look at it, is here is the Lamb of God about to be sacrificed, crossing over a brook that was full of blood from all of the sacrifices that the Jews had put together. And I'm sure that's why John put that in there. To a Jew, they would have understood what that brook was at that time. It was full of blood. All right, verse 2.
Now Judas also, who was betraying him, knew the place, for Jesus had often met there with his disciples. Judas then, having received the Roman cohort and officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees, came there with lanterns and torches and weapons. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that were coming upon him, went...
Okay, is that verse 5?
This is 4.
4, okay. Let's stop there for a second. How many men do you think were there?
It was a company of soldiers.
Group of 300 to 600.
Yeah, there's in the Greek there are three words kind of all intersect. So it was either 200, 600, or 1,000. Now that's kind of amazing when you stop and think about it. I mean, here's one person that they're interested in capturing, and at the minimum they had 200 people, absolute minimum. They had Roman officers. They had temple police. They had people from the Sanhedrin. And they could have had as much as 600 or at the top 1,000. All for one man. And of course they had torches to lead the way. And so obviously if you wanted to get away or if you were unprepared or whatever, it would certainly catch your attention to see literally hundreds of torches or whatever it was coming up your way. So here's what they sent to get one man. Just kind of amazing. Okay, continue.
Jesus, therefore, knowing all the things that were coming upon him, went forth and said to them, "Whom do you seek?" They answered him, "Jesus the Nazarene." He said to them, "I am he." And Judas also, who was betraying him, was standing with them.
Okay, let's stop there. Okay. What do we see Jesus' attitude right here?
Submission. Acknowledgement. I am here. Here I am.
Yeah. Total submission.
It's expected.
No fear. Knew it was coming. Certainly, I think, very kind of him. Here's a group of men. Here's 200 to 1,000 soldiers. And, you could have seen where there could have been some panic among the soldiers or something, and maybe they attacked all of them. So Jesus steps forth, as he always does, thinking of others, saying, "Who do you seek? I am he." So there's no confusion who it is, so nobody else is mixed up in it. Now, the Desire of Ages brings in a picture that's touched by Luke a little bit, but we have a much better picture. When Jesus stepped forth and said, "I am he," do you remember last week where we talked about the angel, the third time that Jesus went to pray in the garden as he lied on the ground, that he would have died there, except finally God let the angel, we assume it's Gabriel, on the right hand who had taken Satan's place in heaven, he came down and revived Jesus. He held him in his arms. He pointed towards heaven and he gave Jesus the assurance that his Father was with him and loved him. At this time when Jesus stepped forward, said, "Who are you seeking?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." And he stepped forward and said, "I am he." That same angel stood in front of Jesus between the crowd. And does anyone know what the other gospel writer said? The crowd fell down, as if stunned by the light and the glory. Don't you think that would have got somebody's attention? I mean, the whole, let's just say there's 500, let's say 600, split the deal. All 600 of them, stunned, fall back, no apparent reason. And it said that Jesus' face shone with the glory from that angel. Don't you think that would got somebody's attention? It's just amazing. And of course, we're going to see one other thing very quickly that should have said a whole lot. So Jesus steps forth. Angel steps in between. They fall. Then the angel, the glory of the angel disappears. And they're right back. And they grab Jesus. And they be. And now, let's pick up with Matthew. Hope it's 47.
Start with 47.
Yeah, well, wherever it says the rest, yeah, I'll just...
Here comes the betrayer.
Yeah.
While he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived. With him was a large crowd armed with swords and clubs, sent from the chief priest and the elders of the people.
Remember, these are sent from the general conference. You get that picture? General conference. Okay.
Now the betrayer had arranged a signal with them. The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him. Going at once to Jesus.
Okay, let's stop there for a second. Do you see anything in that particular sign that would be different? Certainly is in our culture.
The kissing, come on, kissing the...
Yeah.
You think the Roman soldiers would have had sense enough to realize something was wrong, and the Jews were so filled with hatred for them, they would have done it. It's amazing.
Oh, lots of it's amazing. See anything in the kissing?
That was a normal greeting.
Yeah, it was normal greeting. When somebody was a rabbi, teacher, master, held in a little higher esteem, it was a normal thing that you'd put each hand on a shoulder and just give a kiss out of respect. And that's exactly what Judas did. What's interesting is there's two words for kiss in the Greek. When Judas says, "Whoever I kiss will be the man," that's that affectionate, respectful kiss. When the scriptures tell us that he greeted Jesus with a kiss, this was a kiss between two lovers. Very passionate kiss. So, I wonder what happened to Judas in that moment. Because I don't think he certainly meant anything other than as a betrayal to point out exactly what he said. When I greet the master with an affection, with a just a respectful kiss, that's the man. But the text out of the gospel is very clear that this was a very passionate kiss. So what do you think was going through Judas's mind?
Well, you talk about passion. Passion has intensity of emotion. Judas knew what he was about to do, so maybe there was anxiety, fear. Maybe there was excitement. This is when he's going to wipe out the Romans and do it. We don't know. I mean, there's that whole theory that Judas thought he was going to bring Christ to the glory by doing this. So it could have meant a lot. There was a lot of emotion in the kiss. We don't know what the emotion was.
Could the emotion have come from Christ, from Jesus?
Doesn't lend. Could be, didn't lend it to be. Could be. We're told one of the motivations that Judas had was that he thought that he would force Jesus into showing who he was and overthrow the Roman government. I think that as we study the life of Judas, that could have been his rational thinking at the beginning. But as we're going to go through this experience, and we're going to go through, of course, what finally happened, we see that he was beyond any type of reproach or anything that Jesus could do. As we talked 2 weeks ago, you know, Jesus in the Lord's Supper appealed to Judas over and over and over in that. And so, but I thought it was very, very interesting that he started out with one concept, but something happened there. And it became a very passionate lover's kiss. Obviously, it didn't change anything, but there was some emotion there. Okay.
He said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and he kissed him. Jesus replied, "Friend."
See, that's the kiss. Started out with whoever I kiss, respectful, nice, greeting Rabbi. Somewhere between those two, there was something that happened. Okay.
Friend. Do what you came for.
Okay. Now, how do you think Jesus said that sentence? I mean, there's obviously lots of ways to say it.
With great agony. I mean, I think he sensed that that at that point there was no reaching Judas and that he was cut off from Judas. So it's almost like a do what you want, almost a helpless sense.
Okay. What's that first word mean to you?
Maybe sarcastic. I don't know.
Well, he's still cared for him.
Could be sarcastic, but I believe I know Jesus. Another appeal.
My translation reads, Jesus said to him, "Comrade, upon the basis of a comrade are you present? Have you come as my friend?"
Yeah.
You know, why does my version say, "Friend, why have you come?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that friend's a powerful word. Very powerful. Continue.
Then the men stepped forward, seized Jesus, and arrested him. With that, one of Jesus' companions reached for
him. All right, let's stop here for a second. Now, Jesus is there. They've been knocked to the ground. They've revived. Judas comes, does his thing, and then Jesus sets and allows himself to be bound. Now, this is important because we're going to see in a second something that comes low. So there they are, they're binding him, they're holding him, doing everything, and he's allowing all of this. Now, very important to, let's step back. What do you think was going through the good Jewish people, Roman soldiers, what were going through the minds of these 500 men? What do you think was going through their mind?
Why'd they need all of us?
Yeah, hope we're getting paid for this? Yeah.
Well, I would imagine going there, there's that sense of any, like going on a mission, you're anticipating and you don't know if there's going to be a fight or, and then you get there and this occurs.
Yeah.
What is this about?
Matthew's writing his books to the Jews. See, boy, he certainly makes a big point. They got their clubs, I mean, they're ready for a fight. Man and 11 disciples. However, we think we'll find out in a minute that there might have been another observer there. Kind of very interesting. But, a man and his 11 followers, they're ready for war. Here the guy doesn't even put up a fight. And so they're binding him. So I imagine most of them thought, man, there's nothing to this. This guy's a puppy dog.
When they offered the sheep on the altar, did they bind their feet to keep them?
I have no idea. It's a good question. Does anybody know? Don't know. It's a good question. I'll have the answer next week. Well, I won't be here next week. Did they bind the sheep's feet on the altar when they sacrificed them? Well, you would think. But I don't know. So it'd be interesting. I'll find out for us. Soldiers thinking, nothing to this. Jewish leaders thinking, nothing to this. What do you think was going through Judas's mind?
What's wrong with him? He'll take care of this. He'll come forth.
Do you think he has any regret?
I don't know about regret yet, but certainly some anxiety.
Okay.
He sees the event unfolding.
Okay.
Well, when you end up killing yourself,
you have regret.
That's something.
Not at this
but it wasn't at
point.
Point.
Pardon?
Not at this point, I don't think.
I think he just kind of...
Surprised.
I think anxiety, maybe surprise is a good word. I think he's kind of waiting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, he thought Jesus was going to come forth and...
Yeah.
Fall to them. I'll fall in. Yeah.
Could have been something. What are you waiting for? We don't know. We do have an end. Go ahead, Leroy.
Pardon?
Jim, excuse me.
When that angel intervened on Christ's behalf, of course, he saw that. He may have had a ray of hope at that point. Just wait. That's what's going to happen. But I won't be one that's knocked down. We don't know what happened.
No, we don't have a full insight. You would think to Judas, though, it certainly would have been an attention grabber. Wait a minute. Okay? What do you think was going through the disciples' minds? This we do have an insight on. Well, we know Peter, but I'm not talking about the eleven collectively.
I think it's still surprise on their part, because while he's told them a couple of times what was going to happen to them, they still didn't want to believe that. They wanted to believe he was going to take the same as Judas. They wanted to believe he was going to take over.
Okay. Yeah.
They, you know, probably ready to fight. Maybe they thought this is the moment.
There's a key word I think it's going to shock you.
A dozen guys up against an army.
Well, they pull out a sword and cut off an ear.
Afraid? Afraid is a good word. It's not the correct one. Or not a correct one. We'll get to Peter in a minute. Let's talk about the 11 disciples collectively. What one word would you use? It's a very interesting word. I found it very interesting.
Disappointment?
Pardon?
Fear.
Fear? That's what you...
Disappointment?
Getting close. Embarrassment.
Oh, yeah.
They were embarrassed that Jesus would allow himself to be held and bound. The 11 closest people to him for 3.5 years, embarrassed. Fear certainly set in, that's obvious, but they felt a twinge of embarrassment that their leader would give up that easy. Certainly puts Peter's deal a little bit more perspective.
Well, they felt like they had been wasted their last years, and they believed in somebody that wasn't real.
Peggy's a counselor. You're a counselor. You know, one of the things I know y'all know, when anything happens bad, the first thing that crosses anybody's mind is, how does it affect me? I mean, that's just a principle. And that's exactly what was going through their minds was, they must not have been too fearful for their own life, particularly, but they were embarrassed that their leader had just sat there and submit himself, and they just saw kind of what was going to happen. Unbelievable. So we have the soldiers, the Jewish leaders, the Sanhedrin, the temple police. They're all saying, easy night so far. Judas, just waiting. Disciples, embarrassed. Next verse.
One of Jesus' companions reached for his...
No, stop there. Why does Matthew say that? John says it was Peter, but why does Matthew just say one of his companions? Put your thinking hat on.
He wasn't being more anonymous.
No, he wasn't particularly being polite. There's a specific reason, we think.
But when was this song written?
It was written not too far after this happened, within probably 10, 12 years. You're close. You're on the right track.
I don't think they were still looking for him.
Yeah, they wanted no reprisal against Peter. So he doesn't name him. John, remember, he writes his about 89, 40 years, 50 years later after all this happened. So he just says Peter did this and everything. Matthew, writing to the Jews themselves, very careful. So he says one of his companions. Okay, what does Peter do?
He drew out his sword and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear.
Okay. Now, let's stop there. Now, does being embarrassed and Peter's reaction put just a little, not a whole lot, but just a little, you know, part of us, we wanted to think he was heroic and all of that, but maybe a little of it was, well, if you're not going to do anything, so...
Well, maybe that says a little bit about Peter, because he did say, I would die for you, I'm willing to die for you.
Yeah. Let's check on Peter about 4 or 5 hours later and see how he does.
It's like the littlest of the group goes and attacks the guy, and oh, my friend's here to back me up, though. You know, Jesus is going to get me out of this.
Yeah. Like, see, that's why I think the embarrassment plays a small part in Peter's temper, which he had a temper. He was outspoken. He was not a great thinker at this time. He is more of a reaction. But part of that was being mad, and part of that's being embarrassed. Man, somebody's got to do something. You're not going to do anything. So he reacts, gets his sword, cuts off the guy's ear. Must have been a bad swordsman.
He just, his
anger. Now, read on. Cuts his ear off.
Put your sword back in its place, Jesus said to him. All who draw the sword will die by the sword. Do you think that I cannot call on my Father and He will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled?
Okay, let's stop there for a second. Other version says that Jesus did what?
He fixed his ear.
Okay, and how did he do that?
Put the ear back on.
Well, he was bound. I don't know.
That's my point. You caught it. That's why the detail is told of here. He was bound. He was held. Disciples embarrassed. Well, how did he get that hand free?
He didn't need a hand.
But he touched. He touched the ear. See? He had the power all the time. He had the power all the time. Only to help others. Being bound all of a sudden didn't mean anything. Now, here's what's the most amazing thing. Here you see a soldier, high priest attendant, get his ear cut off. This horrible, horrible, horrible person heals it back. What do you think the 500 soldiers would think? What do you think Judas would think? What do you think the disciples would think? What do you think Peter would think? Isn't it amazing that nobody can put any of this together?
They were so caught in their own emotions, they couldn't see out of it. I mean, they were just caught.
And what does that say about us? We all would like to think if we were there, we would be different. But it's important for us to understand that we not only have this story, we not only have the end of the story, we not only have the rest of the story, because we can see the beginning and the end. And then we have the same assurance, the same things that God has done in our lives, And how many times do we just do exactly the same thing? So it's easy to be amazed as the Creator of the universe bound, held, reaches out, heals the poor man, puts his ear back, from all accounts did nothing. Must have done something.
Right. Imagine the guy that I would assume they have to bind him up again.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he just put his hands back and it's, you know.
I mean, you know, what did the guy think?
Yeah.
It affected nobody.
Do you think what Satan was at work to keep everyone in a daze? Right?
Let me tell you. There's two powers that work in this world. There is no riding of the fence. You're either in one camp or the other. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to, no one kind of looks at that because we all kind of like to think, well, we're good, we're halfway good or what. But there's two camps. And when you get into Satan's camp, he works and he works and he works and he drags and he hides and he spoils and he keeps dragging your senses, your reasoning down to that no matter what God does, it will not faze you. Now we're going to come across something in a few minutes that fazed everybody in that crowd.
Now, later, at Christ's death, the soldiers, we don't know that they were the same ones that were here.
I have any idea.
We have no idea. I wonder if those events, the falling back on the ground, the healing of the ear, if some people later realized and then recognized.
Well, would hope so.
Yeah.
Would hope so. See, but we know at the end of time, again, y'all have been around long enough, know I get to it outside of the prodigal son, that's probably what I get to the most, is at the great panoramic view. Doesn't change a person. They say, God, you're just, God, you're merciful, God, you're right. Doesn't change a person. It's what sin does. It's what sin does. So here we have a group. Seeing God's angel, we assume it's Gabriel. He replaced Lucifer in heaven. Blinds them. They fall down as dead men. Miraculous. Putting an ear back on. They see the calmness of Jesus. They see his face shine. No problems. Doesn't do a thing. Read on.
Said, at this time, Jesus said to the crowd.
Now, this is what they remember. We're told that this is what they remember.
Am I leading a rebellion that you come out with swords and clubs to capture me? Every day I sat in the temple courts teaching, and you did not arrest me. But this has all taken place that the writings of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then all the disciples deserted him and fled.
Okay. At the crucifixion, these, we said 500 people, they did remember. And you ought to read the other three Gospels, what Jesus said, was they did remember these words. They didn't remember things that moved them towards God, they remembered the ones that really brought them condemnation. And how did the good disciples react? They fled. Just absolutely amazing. Mark says in a two verses, after he tells his version of this story, that there was a young man who ran and they ran after him. And they grabbed his robe and he ran away naked. And it's pretty well assumed that this was Mark himself. So we assume that Mark was younger, that he might have been around there, around the disciples, or he might have been there. And he just simply says, and a young man fled, and they grabbed his robe, and he ran away naked. And doesn't identify who it was, but we assume, I mean, how would he know that? Unless, obviously, we assume that he was the young man and that he was there. So, as always, I try to look at the center of the story. It's always about God, never about man. And here was a group that was looking to finally accomplish. Here was Judas, as he betrays, called friend, an appeal. Here was a miraculous God intervening with the glory of the angel, miraculous healing of the ear. And the story ends, Jesus bound, taken before the rulers, disciples running, nobody affected. We're told that if we can understand sin, then we can excuse it. It's a powerful statement. But you see, when one is separated from God, going down a path that leads from God, if we're soldiers, we bind him and want him dead. If we're a Judas, no matter what appeal comes, we simply betray him. And if we're his closest friend, and times get hard, we simply run and hide. And yet he loves each one of us, despite who we are. Our Father in heaven, you came forth from that garden making a decision after praying, I don't want to go through this, but whatever your will is. And once you said that and made up your mind, you came forth and the rest, you put up no fight. You cared, you loved. And at your death, you still brought a person to eternal life. We would like to think that perhaps we would have been as bold as Peter, or that we would have been comforting. We would have walked with you as you went to be tried. We would have been there and prayed as they beat you. But Father, sometimes, in the easiest of times, we let you down. Help us to keep focused on your love. Help us to continue to remember what you've done in our lives in the past, how you've always been there. Might been not been the answers we were looking for, but you always let us know that you cared and that you loved. We ask that each one of us, through the next few weeks, as we look at the crucifixion, as we look through the trials, that we understand the greatest principle. With you there is love and eternity. Without you, there's that separation and eternal death. No wonder you said, way back in the Old Testament, choose you this day whom you will serve. You made it so easy for us to decide. Your love appeals to our heart. Your love attracts us. And we truly have to be in rebellion to reject that. So we ask tonight that every day we will allow that love to pull us closer and closer to you. And then we can share with our brothers and sisters your great love. Thank you for these good people. Thank you for our friendship among all of us, and that we have the privilege of coming and studying for an hour your love. Pray these things in the precious name of Jesus. Amen.